Hey, you. Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Warui Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WarueiDesho or email us at WarueiDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show.
Yeah, sorry for that small technical issue there. As soon as we actually went online, the entire
died. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, we're off to a flying start today.
Why does this always, I swear to God, always happens? Just immediately when we go online.
You literally push the button and it broke.
Where Doc's like covering his mouth. He's like, oh my god.
Like, just glanced over and then it's like, oh, what the fuck is happening? I thought it was set up somewhat decently. There we are.
There, well, I've returned anyway. So apologies for mild technical difficulty there, folks. Doc decided to, you know, use Discord for its intended purpose and it just completely shat itself. So there we go. Thanks, Discord. Could do all the loading lines you want, but you can't actually make the damn videos. Yes.
Despite having a fucking update every single day, it still crash.
Anyway, so, ladies, gentlemen, MBs, welcome to episode 12 of season 4 of Stream of 4, covering Promised Neverland, the finale, The Great Escape itself. And, of course, a very happy Friday to everyone. I have a bottle of Halcyon here, which I found at my local Morrison's. Joining me, as always, is genuinely great guy. You know, he's over in the ocean somewhere, you know, across the way, being himself, looking a lot like a character from Firefly today, as I noted to him before. It is, of course, the Soul Doctor.
I'm not just the president of the Yandir fan club. I'm also a client.
The more you know, the more you know, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, you know, joining us as well is freshly minted Netflix executive, Vargellia.
Oh, my God.
Yes, because of your incredible Twitter suggestion.
I wrote the upcoming Netflix show, live action, The Promised Neverland for Netflix.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. For the WB. Yeah,
that was a thing. That
also, I have alcohol this time. This is like my third time drinking alcohol. I'm feeling it.
Basically, you know, I'm no longer the alcoholic on this show. I am, I suppose, but at least I have company now. Yeah. Doc, you know, Stone Cold Sober over there, being sensible.
Lightweight.
I have to drive us all home, so somebody's got to.
I mean, look, he has the dad outfit, the working dad outfits. That's exactly what he needs to. Like,
I'm wearing my Comic-Con Starship Troopers t-shirt. And why, lovely. Yes, if you do ask me, I will tell you more. Anyway, so this is episode 12 of The Promised Neverland. We're going to see this show out. What a ride has it been?
We're going to see our children out. They're out.
Yes, they are.
Bye, children. We love you.
But firstly, we're going to, of course, address our Twitter topics polls from the previous week. So, you know, Doc, when you know you're not being a big damn hero, you can tell us all about it.
Okay, so these are the polls. March 22nd is when we posted them. That seems forever ago. And I'm pretty sure these were... Yeah, this is to 10 and 11. Please ignore the ringing phone.
Oh my god.
Here, let me just mute myself really fast and you guys continue.
Damn.
Basically, I think that might be Discord taking issue with what we said earlier, and that's why they're just ringing Doc on now. How dare you insult our video streaming, you know, and communication platform? We are greatly, greatly offended by this.
He didn't mute himself. His business voice is so funny. Nope. Please leave. Nope.
To be fair, I can speak very formally as well on demand, you know, as part of my job.
Oh my god, he's about to kill someone.
Yeah, the asking price is $10 million.
You had your chance. Now it's all over. It's too little, too late.
Sounds like the last conversation I had on Tinder, to be honest.
Oh my god.
He's gonna let you know, Vogue, not to drink more alcohol.
This is our last episode for The Promised Neverland.
So that'll be our last episode. Ah!
Our children deserve better.
There's not enough booze in my booze, so excuse me.
We've all been fired.
You were not muted, by the way, my friend.
I'm not to you guys. I was muted to the stream.
Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, I was muted to the stream.
We thought you were about to, you know, get a contract hit out or possibly, you know, do it yourself.
Anyway. I made an impression of you and they couldn't hear you. That's so sad. Oh my, I have to.
They could hear you.
Down.
They could hear you doing the impression, though, which I want to go back and listen to now. I'm excited about that. But yeah, no, we've got 2 hours to collect our things and exit the building. We've all been fired from podcasting.
Oh, shit. Well, I best leave my own home in that case.
That was Mr. Podcast.
He's a twat as far as I remember.
John Podcast? Oh my god, John Podcast himself.
The John H. Podcast Esquire, yes.
He never shits up.
So Twitter, here's the polls, right? So was Norman's death a, quote, good death philosophically? 80% said, yep, he went out well. Is Grace House really just a Fortnite map in disguise? Excellent question. 60%, though, didn't know how to answer it. They said, what is Fortnite?
Well done. That's the correct answer. You have passed the test.
Yes, 30% said absolutely. Without knowing of Emma's plan, was Ray right? Excuse me, to want to take his own life and defy the demons of the Promised Neverland? 57% said yes. You know, we can't talk about this. We just have to move on to episode 12. Okay, moving on. Gonna mentally move on. Is Isabel a sympathetic villain? One that we can understand and identify why she does the things she does? Clearly, we know after episode 12.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's read one this poll exactly.
Not even just episode 12. Episode 12, like, just throws so much stuff out from the manga that give her so much more character and, like, kind of explain everything about her so much better.
Vorgelia.
Like, I would not be surprised if people said, nah. Because the anime didn't establish her as such.
There were a few.
I read everything, by the way.
I was going to say, Valerie, newly minted manga reader.
I've read, like, everything from Escape to wherever the manga is right now.
So, like, yeah, I mean, there were a few little bits, I feel, in the anime where you could do the, like, Dark Souls storytelling. Yeah. You could, like, fill in the blanks yourself.
Yeah, that's how she feels about it.
Pretty sure, yeah, based on, but without those inner monologues, like you said, it's, off chat, you said it's those really, really lay it out in a poignant way. But 80% said yes, that she's also a victim. And those are the polls from 10 and 11.
Indeed. Cool. Thank you very much, everyone, for taking part in those. So let's talk about episode 12. We now return to The Promised Neverland, already in progress. I will say, before we say anything else about it, so one thing that I really liked, that's just a minor thing, there's a new. I don't know what you call it, a bumper or something for Noitamina, which is specific for this show. They didn't have to make it for this specifically. But I really like that they did. They're obviously very proud of this show, and rightly so, they should be. But I'm guessing it just must mean that they're, you know, planning on bringing out for further syndication. I mean, I think it's going to be on Toonami at some point soon.
Really?
Possibly. Maybe.
Wow.
I may have misread that, so don't quote me on that.
That being said,
We also have been told that there will indeed be a season 2 in 2020. Excellent.
Nice.
I mean,
let me unmute myself for the stream. It is coming to Toonami. You're correct. You're right about that.
Good call.
Nice. And yes, season 2. Before we get into the plot, though, do you want me to talk about the director really fast?
Yes, please. Okay. Please do.
And this helps because last time we knew that Chiaki Nagai was the director of 10, but we didn't know the director of 11. Turns out the director of 11 is the same as the director of 12, Toshio Ono. And interestingly enough, Toshio Ono, like, is credited in ANN not with episode direction, but with series composition. And the writing of 6 different scripts for The Promised Neverland. And so I think, like, based on the fact that this person directed the last 2 episodes and the first one, in addition to, like, 1 or 2 in the middle, I think we can go ahead and say this person is the head writer for the show. Because usually the head writer, at least when I've done, I'm not going to say it's every time, but when I've looked into it, they direct the first episode and last episode. In addition to the writing, or they write, not direct, but write first episode and write last episode. Additionally, we've got credits on Ono's resume for series composition of Suritama, which, again, I'll say it again. I've said it before on this stream. Watch that show. That show is great. If you watched Neverland, the voice actor who plays Don plays one of the main characters in Suritama, and he's totally different. Like, the voice Don makes when he's like, yeah, in this show, like, that's the voice of the character all the
time. Don is fucking everyone's, like, 6th favorite character.
Oh, dear.
But Haru in Suritama is way better. He's squirting everyone with water guns, and, he's also an alien who loves fishing. That's a great show.
That'll do.
Got Gatchaman Crowd, series composition, both seasons, some Precure stuff. So pretty accomplished as far as, like, writing things that have been well-received by the fan community.
Fair enough.
I think drinking was a mistake.
Well, I've been telling that myself. Please, I've been telling myself that for 12 years, but it doesn't stop me from doing it. Happy Friday.
My head feels weird.
Mine does too, but maybe that's just my, you know, lack of hair. Anyway. So, moving on. So, We pick up where we left off last time, which is Grace House is indeed burning down, and Phil has just gone up to Mom and said, hey, Mom, you know, pay attention to me because, you know, my home is burning to the fucking ground, please. That'd be nice. And we can cut, of course, to Ray and the other kids on the wall. And this is where things start to unfold backwards. Like, we then learn how this, more details of how this all came together. We also do indeed learn the fate of the other children, because we did see that none of the babies or the younger kids were with them at the end of episode 11. What's happened is that while she was still laid up in bed, recovering from her broken leg, Emma, Don and Gilda had a roundtable discussion in which they basically had to decide, do we take everyone or do we not? For reasons that have been articulated both by the show and by ourselves previously, you know, is it right to leave them behind because there would be a burden on us, or because it would be unfair on them given how young they are? We've tread this war before, essentially. And as you might recall, Emma's position throughout pretty much the entirety of the show has been, we take everyone, no exceptions, clean sweep, Abe's Odyssey, perfect ending, that kind of thing. Everyone gets out. But this is the point, like, this is one of the points of this episode where we see the culmination of everything that's happened with Emma and how she has changed as a character without losing that innate, you know, caring nature of hers that makes her be the real mother of this show. But also that, you know, as something I'm personally fond of and approve of, is that sometimes pragmatism does demand that you have to make hard choices. It's not as simple as, you know, getting everyone out and then actually having it happen. So, after discussing it with Don and Gilda, in which Gilda is very much, you know, of the opinion that it's not right for us to leave everyone behind, but we have to because it's not going to be right for us to take them with them either. This is one of the things I really like about this dilemma, in that there's no right answer or easy answer to be taken. It's a tough choice, regardless of what they do. But indeed, the decision is made after discussion with her, including Don, who he seems to lie with the idea of we take everyone, but when they discuss this, he is visibly shaking over this, but he has no answer because he knows that it's right, that it would be, you know, bad for the kids to come with them that in that number. But it doesn't mean he's happy about it. It doesn't mean any of them are happy about it. They don't do this lightly. But they have a plan in mind. So they call in everyone's favorite little Cthulhu, Phil.
Phil.
So all of this build-up throughout this entire show, like where we've seen so many scenes of Phil, like, you know, being singled out, made to be important through the framing of the camera, all of that, this pays off here. And
it's basically revealed that Phil is like the kind of younger version of one of the highest scoring students. Like, I would imagine he's like a kind of a, like, they kind of explore what a young person kind of going through this revelation and seeing the kind of stuff would be like. He's more attentive, he's kind of dealing with shit.
Yeah.
Continue, please.
Indeed. So all of that build-up that we've seen now pays off here, because Phil says, after they revealed the truth to him, that he kind of knew. He kind of knew all along, despite how young he is, despite, you know, all of that.
I knew it. I eat all the brains. It was me.
Sorry.
And they just devours them all, and we get the Undertale-style bad ending. Wah, wah. But yeah, even despite his young age, and, you know, the fact that Emma had previously stated she didn't want to tell the young kids because they wouldn't believe it, he gets it. He knows. And he starts weeping because he realizes then that that's what happened to Norman and to Connie.
Yeah. And to everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so
he put it all together. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go on. You first.
Oh, no, I was just going to, like, he put it all together based on these observations. Like, you know, I liked this, like, aside from, like, him being a genius and, like, thinking about how that sort of person at a young age deals with this. I just like the fact that, like, here you have this kid who's been observant, and we've seen him all around, like you said, like, looking in on things and showing up at the end of certain scenes or whatever, and, like, he's watching, he's listening, and kids aren't completely stupid. Like, he knew something was up. And this is the first time that he's not smiling, which really, like, got to me during this scene. Because he's always has got a little his little smile on.
He's a little imp.
Yeah, that's the correct word. Yes.
Yeah, he's loving his little, you know, 4 or 5 year old existence. It's great. But yeah, so this is Emma's plan. She can't get all of the kids out now. It isn't going to happen. If it does, they're going to probably end up severely endangering them, or, you know, they could even die. It could cause the whole thing to collapse.
Yeah.
But all of the hints that we, all of the rules that have been set out to us have been laid down. The kids aren't harvested until a minimum age, which is 6 years old. So all of the children who are under that age, like by at least a bit of a distance, they can leave behind safely, knowing they're not going to be immediately devoured. And so Phil is being left behind and being informed of this as essentially the kind of next generation, you know, giving him the knowledge of and the truth. So he in turn can, you know, get them out maybe when the time comes, or at least to keep them safe until Emma can return. Because indeed, Emma says that she will return. She'll be back to get the remainder of the kids and everyone else in the other plants that are there. So it isn't the case of them being left completely in the lurch here. Emma is still doing something for them, which is that she is giving Phil the truth. I mean, I said before, like, about how Norman and Connie's death differs a little bit. And I think that, you know, in their shoes, I would be much rather go out if I was forced to, knowing how the world works and really is, as opposed to living a lie. So, back to the escape. All of the kids have made it onto the wall. The other younger kids meet up with Isabella. She's still got her, you know, ham radio set up, and she's not doing a shock jock hour, as it turns out. She actually ends up calling through to headquarters to inform them of the accident, although the fact that no one seems to have spied the giant plume of smoke and thought, shit, dog, that'd be pretty fire over there. Like, no one's, like, spied that, but yeah, the alarm is sounded. Now, remember the plan previously? We were going to go over the bridge. We're going to get over there. And that turns out to be, you know, a bait and switch here.
So it's the fucking, yes, we're going to go over the bridge. And that's what a dumbass would say. Not. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at? Yeah, just fucking walking at the wall while freestyling.
Next up on the Isabella and Crone Hour, how to properly control your children before they get turned into lunch meat. But first, Phil Collins.
Fail.
Oh man, we'll get to Leslie soon enough. So it turns out the kids have been training, and specifically they've been training. Don rather has been training on how to throw a length of cloth around a tree stump from a distance.
Or, dumbass! Just get a bottle rocket. You.
We'll come to that. We'll come to that. We'll come to that. But yeah.
Goddamn.
So they find the closest point, which Norman has marked out previously on his map, where the gap between the wall and the other side is at its least. And Don manages to get the rope over, round a tree from a distance, and manages to zipline across it. And Ray is watching all of this like,
What the hell?
The fuck? Yeah, it's spelt with Q at the end, by the way, not CK. It's the kind of reaction Ray is having here. But yes, we've got Onion Kid and his fellow, whose names are actually revealed here, but they're essentially filling in Adam and Jamie from Mythbusters here. And kids actually use a bottle rocket to escape from a high-security prison. And this myth is confirmed true, because they use this bottle rocket to get more rogues across, at which point they then start ziplining with coat hanging. So yeah, they've all this preparation has been happening behind Ray's back, and indeed our own, which is something I'll address later. But we get to see scenes of it, like, you know, where it's just, you know, them having a good goof off. The kids are played. It all seems disguised as that. And this is the point where Norman returns, quote unquote. This obviously is not Norman really here. He's not pulling, like, you know, the old bait and switch. Sorry, I punked you by pretending I was dead just to fuck with your brain. He's not doing that. But to speak a little personally for myself here, without actually going into too much detail for a variety of reasons, I think this scene like really strikes me just because even though Norman is gone, he is still with them in memory and example. They have those memories of him, and they have the examples that he left behind him of what they can do and how they can live, you know, just keep on fighting.
This whole plan is his legacy, basically.
Yeah. And so Ray kind of, like, in a monologue, what I'd imagine Norman would say to him about, you know, being fooled. And that's that. He says, you know, everyone...
Show you something cool, bro.
He says everyone's joining in because Emma's the one who's leading it, so everyone trusts her. And it's fair, like, you know, Emma's, you know, got everyone on board, built it up over time. They all know the truth, as we established in the previous episode. So there we go. Now, you might note at this point that the plan has gone pretty well, all told, apart from the fact the alarm got sounded a little early, but that's moot given they're not going to the bridge anymore. And this is where the complication arises. There's a girl whose name eludes me at the moment because I didn't properly take notes because I'm a lazy bastard. Jemima, potato, patata. You're killing me, Doc. You're killing me. Yes. So she, surprisingly, is the, like, there's only three kids left apart from Emma and Ray, which is Jemima, some dude, and Onion Kid. And yes, he has a name, but I'm never going to not call him Onion Kid. Like, you don't have that hairstyle and don't get called Onion Kid. I'm sorry. In the same way that you could technically call me Miss Potato Sweater, I wouldn't necessarily call an insult.
Same way, you know, I have a hairstyle and they call me asshole.
So, Jemima is the first kid to shit a brick over this. Not unreasonably, I would say, because it is literally a gaping chasm of death. So, and then, of course, Onion Kid and the other kid, they start bricking it. Yeah, they look down and they start bricking it too. Jemima's actually crying. And this is the point that Ray steps in, not Emma, as you might otherwise expect, leading into this. And he says, I'll carry you. I'll take you, you know. So they, you know, whip up a little thing, you know, to have her, like, cradled in front of him. He also, you know, talks down Onion Kid and his friend into doing it. Which is fine. And... yeah. Why don't you grow a pair of balls? And the reaction they give is incredible. Like, yeah, we can do this. It's super easy. We got this, bro. But they're kids. So yeah, Ray and Jemima go across. And in turn, the other two kids do, leaving only Emma. Meanwhile, I had to chuckle at this because we didn't get to see it. But the beauty of having an imagination is you can, of course, picture how it looks in your head and how daft it is. So recall that Isabella is the person who, you know, who scaled the wall previously. She knows the kids are up there, even though she can't track them anymore. Because it's not been shown. It's obvious to, you know, infer that they have disabled the other kids' tracking devices with the little clicky thing that Ray built. So we have a bit where she's, like, using a rope to, like, you know, swing around a tree. And then we cut to her on the wall. And I'm like, wow. I didn't realize Isabella was an ultimate ninja warrior champion, you know, in her off hours when she's not raising kids to be turned into hamburgers.
Dude, didn't you see the training Krone went through? She knows karate, man. She knows karate.
I'm serious. Isabella, like, you know, she could totally win Total Wipeout.
She could break someone's
legs. Or Takeshi's Castle, if you're a fan of that. So... everyone's made it across now, apart from Emma, and Isabella is making her way across the wall to go find them. Good thing she's going in the right direction, because she'd have been really embarrassed if she just went the wrong way and then just could circle around and find fuck all. Indeed. So, all the kids are across at this point. Ray is comforting Jemima, and at this point, Isabella catches up with them, or rather just with Emma, who's ready to cross. And she says to her, and that is to Isabella, to Emma, don't go. What is that? Don't go. But Emma takes a look at her, pretty stern, thinks back to the house, which is burning down, and that's the images that we see through Emma's perspective here. And she says, goodbye, house. Goodbye. Goodbye, Mom. And then she crosses. She just goes. And after they cross, the ropes that they had used to get across the chasm fall away because they cut them at the other end. And that's it. They're gone. They've made it. They're out.
All you see is just the ropes get detached from their side of the cliff. Yeah. And then silence.
Exactly. They're just blowing the wind. I honestly thought, by the way, like, I thought to myself, if the episode ended here, that probably would still have been a damn fine ending for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's it, they've done it.
Crying so hard at this point because, like, oh my god, my children made it. I was crying at the fucking bottle rockets. When in any other show, I would be laughing my ass off. But no. My beautiful children, they made it.
Mm. Woo!
They did everything. It's not even Emma. It's not even, like, they were all amazing at the end.
Hmm. But the episode does not indeed end there. There is still quite a fair bit of time left. And this is when Isabella takes time to reflect on what's just happened and who she really is and why she does the things she does. We speculate a lot over the course of this stream of thought here, you know, about who she is, like what's happened to her, where she came from. And we've had hints of this, like how she said to Norman when she was leading him to the gate, I'm so glad I got to meet someone like you. And of course, his probing question before that of, are you happy? To which she doesn't immediately answer. She says yes, but that doesn't mean she is. And like I said, it's a question maybe that she isn't necessarily happy, but so she believes it, which is not strictly speaking the same thing. But this is when the flashback reel comes off, and it's framed a lot like, in certain parts, Crone's flashback. But yeah, Isabella did indeed make it to the wall. But then we also start hearing guitar. Who's this guitar, you might think to yourself? Well, this is a gentleman named Leslie. And he is basically, I would say, to Isabella as Norman is to Emma, or was to him. I would say that they have pretty much the same kind of close-knit relationship. By the way, I'm not going to put this as a full talking point, but I just want to address this now. In this flashback where Isabella is talking to Leslie, she jumps out of a tree and scares the living shit out of him, and then somersaults over said tree to land standing up. It's already been established at this point Isabella is athletic enough to even get up the wall in the first place, so we don't, strictly speaking, need this. But I appreciate that even in this flashback, after the whole story is practically done with, it's still building and reinforcing that. With how she acted, you could tell like how she came from there to here. I really, really like that. But yeah, Leslie is playing a tune on his guitar, and this is something that Isabella takes to heart. But then events play out as you might expect. He is sent away. And Isabella, at some point, as a young child, learns the truth. Indeed, she is then actually, you know, called down from the wall by Grandma, who at the time was a mom, and then is given the same pathway to becoming a mom that was going to be offered to Emma, the thing that we saw before, and also Crone, of course. And then the flashback kicks into fairly high gear. Indeed, one other thing I really appreciate about this flashback is, like I mentioned, how it's framed with Crone. Like, it's practically the same framing, just Isabella in Crone's place. Even to the point where Isabella is the only character who's actually coloured in, and the rest of them are just grayscale nobodies. They're irrelevant. But this flashback provides details that Crone's did not. The key one of which is that we see Isabella nursing her belly because she is heavily pregnant at some point during her mom training. And to divert slightly, here's my thought process at this time. Okay. She's pregnant for reasons that I'll show speculate in a minute. Next bit, next bit. Stop episode, put hands ahead, start screaming internally.
Didn't they show Crone is pregnant?
No.
I think they didn't. Okay.
No, they didn't.
That's weird. I thought that so. They'd something that like they make everyone do.
I think they do.
The manga again, but I think it's like a thing, like everyone.
It's something I'm going to talk about later.
And then, and then they put your children in your farm so that you become heartless and cruel.
Not necessarily, I would say, but I'll save that for later. But anyway, the long story of this is that Isabella, you know, like comes to the point where she is now a mom of Grace House and she hears a child humming a tune. We've heard this tune before. It was only there minutes ago, in flashback at least. And it was Leslie's guitar, just someone humming the beat of it and the tempo instead. Who is that child? It's fucking Ray. Recall the detail he said about how he could remember every detail.
From the moment fucking...
What, even while he was in the womb. The Bear in mind that Isabella...
line ever!
Bear in mind that Isabella was humming that tune while she was nursing him. And Isabella's look is one of it absolutely being crushed immediately. Like, you can only get that, you can only try and mimic that expression by crushing an aluminium can in your hands, trying to get that instead. Because that's what it looked like to me. She just fucking shattered. Yep. And she already had been very broken by that point. I mean, she's already become a mom. Of course, she's been, you know, brainwashed, indoctrinated, broken down, wore down to such fine powder. But this is like the final, you know, insult, final punch. And call me crazy, but did I not guess this just completely randomly that Ray was Isabella's son? I think I said it at the end of last episode.
Different people, nice. Both in chat and on mic, have guessed many things about it. So they're, Emily pointed out correctly, there was someone, I don't remember if it was one of us or a chatter, that was very, like, insistent that Norman was the son.
Okay.
I mean,
don't even have the same hair. What the hell?
Right.
Yeah, it's honestly more likely that Sephiroth is fucking Norman's dad than Isabella is his mom. Just saying, right? Or maybe, you know, Virgil. I mean, I hear he's been getting his end away these days, but that's a different thing entirely. So,
after is this not spoiling, like, the exact, like, the direct next, like, episode that would be not spoiling the first episode of season 2?
Stop it. Control the spoilers.
People are asking, and I'm like, yes, I know. I can tell you.
Right.
Restrain thyself. But yeah, Isabella, you know, she reminisces of her past and what it cost her. Her own son was under her care and yet not in the way that we would appreciate as a real mother-son relationship. She was still sending him off to be eaten. Bear in mind, she brought up his fucking, you know, departure date in response to him trying to escape.
Fuck!
She was doing that. That's it. Man. So, back in the present day, Isabella, hair down and all that, just, you know, letting the moment sink in, takes the ropes in and wishes them well, says, please be careful. Like, she ultimately, you know, didn't help them to escape at any point or, you know, really change her allegiance or anything. But now they're gone. She doesn't, you know, doesn't go, I'll get you next time, you meddling kids. She's not, like, doing that kind of...
Man.
She's not bitter. She's not angry. She's just calmly accepting and even content, I would say. And when she gets back to the children who are outside the Burning Grace house, she says to Phil that they escaped safely, which basically says to me that, yeah, sure, she's done awful things and she is still an awful person. But there's just been that little change, that little pivot. She may not be able to actually, you know, stop them from being sent or, you know, do anything inside her own confines of her, you know, life and rules. But she doesn't take it out on them. She doesn't say to Phil, right, you're getting fucking sent tomorrow. I don't care that you're only like a chicken nugget right now rather than the full fucking thing. But yeah.
Yeah. So, the kids... No, please continue.
Okay. So the kids, they're all running away. Isabella is looking after the remaining children by giving them blankets to keep them warm. It is winter. That's been established previously.
Yeah.
And after a bit more discussion, it literally is a new dawn for them, as the closing image of the episode is sunrise. It's their first morning, is it?
To make a note on that, like, it's in the manga, which shows so much more stuff. It's like, not only is Isabella just kind of content, just okay with how things are, she basically, like, takes away the sheet ropes so that the demons don't find them and actually realize that they ran on that side. She kind of even helps them a bit.
Mm.
And she's like really happy that they escaped.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah. But that's it. That's the Promised Neverland season one ending with their escape. A complete success. Like, the plan did not really fall apart at any point. The one bump that they hit with Jemima was handled immediately. And
they did it.
So good.
That's it. They're out.
Well, let's not worry about, like, the talking points format. Let's just talk. Let's just discuss this. I feel like we could talk about so many things. Borghelia just wants to cry on mic for a while. So.
Don't fucking pay attention to me.
Oh, man.
Just say something.
I'll start off here, because I've been thinking about this show, the run-up to this stream of thought, how I ultimately feel about it. Don't worry, I think it's fucking magnificent. I think it's great. But here's the thing, right? If you boil the show down and its story to its base elements, it's very simple. There isn't any sort of, like...
Sorry? It's a very tight concept. I think that's partially what kind of gave it a lot of momentum. It's children in a house, like, the kind of their opponents are very well defined. They're kind of like, they have one single goal. It's just a very kind of tight concept. So,
yeah.
You know.
Kids escape from confinement. That's really it. Yeah. There isn't any sort of like grand twists or changes throughout. I mean, Norman gets sent and all that. I understand that, but I mean, like, you know, the goal always was to escape, and that's what happens. Isn't we escape, you know, four episodes in and then continue on elsewhere. Yes, that's the premise of the following season, the later material. But this arc was, on its own, just simply from start to finish, we're getting out. It's a simple premise. Like, there's nothing complicated about it. They don't overfluff, like, the reasons why the demons want to eat them. You know, they don't overfluff the kids themselves. They're not like, you know, kids with special powers or some shit like that. They literally just rely on the wits. It's very simple. Well, simplicity doesn't mean it's not engaging, tense, vexing. It doesn't need to be a grandiose, like, you know, tale. Like, I think, for example, of Land of the Lustrous, which I still think is one of my favourite shows ever. But that tale is really, really complex. There's a lot of different things happening over the course of its season. Different events, you know, you meet Ventricusus, you get the, you know, things that happen to Foss, all sorts of shit. I'm just going to say up front, like, that I was initially relatively, and I say relatively because I still thought it was really good, but I wasn't quite 9 out of 10 material on this show. Mm. I thought it was really well done, but I wasn't quite, you know, totally into it. That's not me condemning the show. I think it's just, you know, it hadn't quite separated itself as something truly special. But then by the end, I can only speak to my reactions. I mean, like, I could be critical all I want, like, you know, of various elements of the show's writing and whatnot. I could talk, like, you know, about how the filming works. I could go on for hours about all intricate details. But a show that makes me stop the final episode halfway through because I have to process the emotional implications of what happens to Isabella, and also I had to, you know, I was had my hand in my mouth watching Norman's gradual, almost torturous, you know, exit from Grace House to his doom. That in its own way speaks volumes to me on how good this show is. Forget all the stuff about criticizing or talking or, you know, deconstructing. Let's just talk about my emotional reaction to it, which was, holy shit, I wanted them to succeed. I was biting my hand as Norman went. I was appalled and disgusted in a good way when I found out what happened to Isabella. What more do you want?
Can I say, by the way, that manga does address a lot of the nitpicks and a lot of the theory stuff that we've been talking about, like, very soon after the children escape. So even maybe that stuff's kind of addressed, even the things that are like, yeah, this doesn't make sense.
Well, that's the thing, like, you also have...
You say it.
Well, that's the thing, like, a lot of stuff that... Like, when you watch this show, like, it's like, again, with Land of Lustrous. Oh, you know, they don't find out what Sensei's deal is. Of course they fucking don't. It's, you know, first season. All I ask is that we get a second to address the issues that we discussed, you know, and the things that we want to talk about. So, I think that this is also the show's favour, and especially given that now season two has been confirmed. If you think to yourself, okay, I want to know more about that, give it time. The story's still open. This is the ending of just the first arc. Like, this is the first chapter, so to speak. So,
however, I will make the bridge to, I think, another point you probably have is that, like, this ending was, like, the endless ending, right? It was just this really beautiful, satisfying, cathartic, conclusive moment. And, I mean, if they never made another Promised Neverland episode in some weird alternate timeline where the manga didn't win any awards and the anime adaptation wasn't successful and they just were like, eh, we're going to shelve it. Like, and they didn't make any more, this season can still absolutely stand on its own and absolutely be recommendable. Yeah. Exactly. And not just as, like, a manga commercial, as, like, in its kind of completeness, despite you not knowing the details of what happened after the escape. And
this is true.
I love it for that. That's part of why I was able to get distracted and get busy and move on and not continue devouring the manga like Vorgalia got to do. Because, like, it was walk awayable, not because it wasn't compelling and wasn't good. It's just like, man, that was satisfying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Having read the manga especially, I would kind of doubly say that, not that I don't love it, I love it so much. I'm just saying, like, this kind of, it does feel like the end of a story. It's a completely different story after it, you know. It's kind of survival in the wild. It's not like the kind of as tight of a concept as it is. It's more kind of an adventure, more whatever. So this is definitely kind of the ending of a story, because it's like, it could go anywhere from here. Like, they dealt with this. They did their best. Everything worked out. Now they can do whatever they want. Now it can be anything you imagine.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right, Jock. Like, that endless ending concepts I'm so fond of, like, where it's a complete thing, but it leaves the door open for actual continuation.
Writing into the fucking sunset.
Or, you know, your own, like, headcanon that leaves you comfortable with what happened next.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But there are indeed things that are not addressed by season one, not that these are criticisms, like William Minerva. Were this a standalone story?
Yeah.
Were this a standalone thing where we didn't get season two? I would argue it's fair to criticize the show for keeping that in when we don't do anything with it, but we do have a season two coming, so let's just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention.
You have the same issue with the Harry Potter moment where it's like, yeah, this setup is not resolved in the Harry Potter movies, where it's like, yeah, this thing that's set up isn't kind of resolved here, so whatever. And then they get to the next movie and shit.
Well, that's why J.K. Rowling is running her Twitter like she is now retconning shit. Yeah. I'm right, Anna.
It's like, why aren't there any toilets on this double decker bus with the racist caricature driver? Mm-hmm. Oh, because it's wizards; they could just disappear the poop.
But yeah. It's like we talked about off camera the other day that, like, you know, this, the fact that it's being adapted into television seasons creates these artificial endpoints that don't exist for the manga. Mm-hmm. So it's weird for a long, continuous story that's, like, you know, oh, by chapter, you know, 26, they haven't resolved something that they brought up in chapter 12. It's like, well, that's because there's 100 and something chapters and there's not going to supposed to be like a, you know what I mean? This the adaptation creates these weird, I'd use the word again, artificial endpoints where you can be like, all right, by this point in the story.
Yeah, in this case, they couldn't even move the resolution back.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's like, oh, it's not like, it's, well, William Minerva is like a thing you see when you get out. Like, that's what you need to go with. It can't really move that while they're still in the house. It's just kind of, you can imagine it as if it establishes like a goal, like a hope. It's not, they just get out and then they die by the forest. They get out and they have something to work for, and that makes the ending better in this case.
Aye. So yeah, that's all I really have to say on it at the moment. Like, in just without, I mean, we've gone through 12 episodes of Stream of Thought now. You know about my thinking and like the various critical elements, like, you know, the way in which it's been deconstructed, the way in which the show is made up. But yeah, it got me. In the end, it did get me.
Okay, so, well,
I got that itself is a, you know, achievement unlocks right there.
Well, I feel like as I go through my notes, I'll probably pull some more stuff out of you guys because I got notes.
Well, I do have talking points.
Because I'm running out.
Well, look, I mean, be prepared. I'm just saying, be prepared.
I will kill
more
you.
More tissue. More beer.
Oh, dear.
More brain. I'm hungry.
Like, okay, so I want to talk about this again because you, Shadon, I mean, you addressed it already, but man, I just want to revisit it because, well, the point I'm talking about is Emma making the decision, I guess, with Phil's input, right, to leave the 4-year-olds for, you know, maybe a year, maybe longer, maybe shorter, like, and to come back and raid the farm again to get them out for all the reasons you stated is like... It's such a, like, oh, it's so good because she's, like, adapting on the fly without losing anything in her core that makes her her, you know?
Not even that. It's, like, even going before that, telling Phil, like, a 4-year-old, like, honestly, and, like, okay, this is what's going to happen, and trusting Phil to be able to take care of everything for everyone else. That's like even going even further.
Yes.
Kind of in her character development than just like telling the children and stuff.
Indeed.
I love that. So, like
fully trusts this kid. She brings him in. She tells him everything.
Yeah. And like all the trust she put in the other kids, you know, when they told all the other ones that were older than 4 that were going to escape, like, she put a lot of faith in them, all the older kids did. And then just to see them during the montage helping pull the other kids up the wall, like, in returning that trust and, like, really contributing in this tangible way to the escape and repaying that faith was, like, again, it just, it hit me. It was so... it brought so many good feelings. I loved it so much.
Indeed.
Sorry, go ahead, Shadon. Yes. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
So, this, like, the end of this episode is the culmination of the character arcs of both Emma and Ray. And I loved it for this because I've said before, probably not maybe on this stream of thought, perhaps, but on others, that I am personally a fan of grey morality. Like, I don't think that it's necessarily always the case that you should have hard and fast rules. Sometimes a situation will demand that you be flexible or that you reassess. You can't live your life, you know, permanently being lawful good or chaotic evil for that matter. You know, life is complex. It demands complex answers that, you know, rigid morality, both good and bad, can't give you. Which is also, funny enough, one of the reasons why I actually end up liking Fate's Day Night a fair bit, because Shiro gets, you know, his... you know, lawful good morality completely debunked and deconstructed in the most amazing way possible, as it turns out, but that's a different talk. So, think of it this way, right? Emma, she's pure family. She's purely driven by the, you know, the people around her and making them safe and making them happy. Whereas Ray, he's driven almost entirely, up to this point at least, by himself and his own needs. My wants, my needs, my survival. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. And bear in mind everything that's been said throughout the show. Emma was insistent they take everyone. And Ray was insistent they take no one but themselves. So, where do we end up? We end up with Emma leaving a group of the kids behind. And Ray doing something in himself that shows how he has changed. So they kind of meet in the middle. Because remember what happened on the wall. Jemina, she freaks out. You'd think that...
You'd think Emma would be the person.
Yeah, you'd think. Mm-hmm. But here's Ray, saying, who's previously said, under no uncertain terms, everyone else is a burden. Literally taking one of them as a physical, literal Man. Burden on himself.
I think, yeah. It's definitely true that he changed his mind ages ago, but this is like a literal kind of burden.
Yeah. He doesn't have to perform anymore.
He's
free. No more watchdog. No more double agentry. No more like needing to hide shit. God, and he knows now that these kids are not a burden, that he underestimated them. And he can care about them openly. He doesn't have to worry about them getting shipped off and breaking his heart again. It's so good!
Even after this, Ray becomes so fucking amazing in the rest of this, like, story. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just the beginning, basically.
I love Ray. Yeah,
that moment, I was like, that's it. He has changed definitively as a person for the better. I mean... I think for this way, let's just break this down to actual practical stuff here. Could that rope have held both their weight? I didn't know that. He didn't know that. But he did it anyway. No, he did it anyway. Because it didn't matter. He didn't want, you know, her to suffer. I mean, I could see older Ray saying, leave her behind. You can stay here. I'll go over. Hell, he probably would have been one of the first people over. But he waits until the rest of them go. Much before joining them, and then literally takes Jemima on as an actual right there in your face burden on mm-hmm. his person to get her out. Incredible. And as for Emma, like, she doesn't do it lightly, she doesn't do it happily, she isn't, you know, really, you know, entirely content with this course of action, but she recognizes that her own plan of getting everyone out isn't simply feasible. It is, as Ray will say, so dangerous it could potentially get all of them killed. Or even just one of them. And can you imagine, like, even if one of them had died, that would have broken her heart. So she makes the difficult choice, but she does so, overcoming her other character flaw that she had previously, which is her reluctance to get everyone else on board, that she seemed so sure of herself and what she was doing was right, that she didn't need to give Don and Gilda the full picture. You know, she writes a white lie with them.
Mm. Right.
And now... Going beyond that, she's telling the truth to a child so much younger than her who, if it were anyone else apart from Phil, probably even me at his age, I'd look at her and go, what? I go like that. That's an incredible amount of trust. Supporting someone else, never mind someone that young, that you are essentially going to be, you know, the vanguard for the next generation to try and keep them safe, given everything that's happened. Yeah. That's a huge rookie responsibility, and he's 4. He's not big enough to ride the fucking teacups at Disneyland. That's... Wow. So, yeah, we got 2 solid, consistent, and well-executed character arcs for our main characters. And that's, to me, is probably one of the things I will take away from the show the most. That for so many other shows that we've seen where they simply can't execute, Franks, I'm looking at you again, you know, on their main characters' character arcs, this show does it. And it does it without needing any parlor tricks of powers, mechs, all sorts of crazy shit. It doesn't need anything fancy to dress itself up and just prove, you know what? They'll get by on their wits and they'll get by on their hearts. And I really appreciate them.
So, interesting bit that I was thinking about Emma's plan to leave them behind, which I think is, like, in terms of growth for her, or in terms of even displaying what's inside her, that it's a great moment and everything, and I don't think it should have happened any other way. I'm just curious if you think that her doing it on the basis of the assumption this house will still need to churn out, like, quality over quantity, like, is there any, just me, like, thinking, like, probably not in a way that I should be, but thinking about it in terms of, like, not the story itself, but, like, will this house be that way? Will they change the rules? Will Isabella still be the mom? Like, there's, like, a million variables that could change the way the house operates.
I have some speculation on this. So, first off, immediate aftermath of this, I'm going to be blunt, I think they're going to execute Isabella. They did it on Crone on a much lesser thing. I think we've probably seen the last aggressive.
Well, here's an argument. I don't know if this holds up, but here's an argument as to why you might not. Vorgalia sitting there knowing what's going to happen. Fucking hell.
I'm already out of commission. This gives me, like, a small break to gather myself.
So if you're the demons,
Cause I'm already the demons.
Oh God!
If you, Shadon, are the demons, you take on this role hypothetically.
I'm the demons.
And you have
staff with the little flower thing done. You fucked up. You fucked up and let 15 kids escape. Never
like
happened.
Holding it like like a dart.
Okay.
Actually, I'm glowing.
Think about
myself.
It. Think about it. Think about it this way. The two high... You don't give a fuck about 13 of the 15. I mean, you said, kill the others on site. We only care about the high-quality two. High-quality two have escaped. You don't get those. Now, you have a mom with a heretofore peerless track record in terms of raising high-quality children, and you have someone who appears to be one of the highest of high-quality who's already been raised by her for the last 4 years, and pulling her out of his life and giving him a new mom could easily make the argument that would fuck his emotional development all to pieces. So you want Isabella there to, if for no other reason, to finish raising Phil so you can eat Phil, if you care about quality meats.
So I'm going to it's not mentioned in the anime, but pretty sure in the manga they say early on that basically, like, all of the moms in the five plants and have a similarly high track record. They reserve moms for these, like only the highest moms for this these kinds of plantations. So the other plantations would have a similar quality also.
But if you're a kid and your mom gets swapped at four, that's going to fuck you up.
That's true.
No matter how caring they are.
Well,
I mean, Crone came over and watched them for a bit.
But that was in addition. That was like a babysitter. That was a cousin, an aunt. If your mom goes away forever and you get a new mom, it's hugely disruptive to you as a child.
I still disagree for other reasons as well. There's the more practical one, which is Grace House is burned down. Where are they going to stay? They need to go elsewhere. Here's how I see it. Regardless of what happens to Isabella, and this is going to come to a shock to Emma later, the kids who remain are going to be split up and sent to the other houses. They can take them in. They've got room.
Forget it, I can't see. What really happens is the bat cave solid steel house from underneath rises up. There's the new Grace House 2.0, bitches.
It's a statue. It's a giant statue of he slash him.
Yes. like a hand of Nod from Command and Conquer.
Yes. Oh. And it has a door on his stomach, and it's a full house.
Oh my God. That's incredible. I mean, and also, of course, you've got Robo Isabella running the shop now as
Robo Isabella. Oh my God.
Dude. Hello, children. I will raise you.
They ate my brain, but I'm fine.
What do you mean? Of course it's me, of course.
They will not eat you.
You insisect. AI.
Can we, like, while we're talking about he/him and the demons, I mean, like, let me just take a moment and talk about how fucking buff they all were for no reason. They were just all enormous, like... all walking around with their spears guards, all day,
basically.
Just lifting.
Were they possibly members of the Body Improvement Club from Mark Cycle?
Yes, exactly.
Twisted timeline.
Basically guards and stuff. There's more lanky ones later.
You've just got Demon so Bob walking past Demon Sim, and he goes, "Bro, do you even lift?" He's like, "Bro, of course I lift."
Bro, you skipped leg day. Oh, fuck.
They all did. What is this leg day? We do not leg day. Give me
I
more dumplings.
I can't run after the children because I only have sticks for legs.
I have to waddle. Oh, fuck. But I look good doing it.
Yeah. But I am of the opinion they will probably off Isabella, but not something that we would see, but rather that's it. And then we come back later, maybe, and we will thank you, Phil. And I do think they would split the kids up just at least in the interim until Grace House is rebuilt. Because they need to put them somewhere. There isn't anywhere else for them to go. They can't put all of them in one house because there's not enough room in one. But you've got 15 kids, so 5 plants, 3 kids per plant. Makes sense.
Maybe there's like a spare small house because the population has been drastically reduced.
Like, all right, Grandma, what do we do?
Is this a dress?
The next
book. And, like, literally the next chapter, they say what happens.
Oh, okay,
well, we'll just have to wait until 2020.
Different point, then. Sort of...
Oh, please continue.
No. Oh, no, just, it's okay.
I want to say what happens!
Gotta hold that.
Stuff it, Val. All right. Shut your trap and wait. okay. So, I want to, like, here's something I was thinking about when I was watching the episode a second time, is I was, like, projecting, like, myself in the shoes of, like, a random kid in this house, right? That Emma told the secret to. And I wondered, like, you know, I mean, we think it's fantastic that Emma's trust was rewarded, and I still do. I'm just wondering, like, you know, if that was me, thinking about my own relationship with my mom, my sibling, and my friends, like, and if there was this choice put before me, like, you have to betray your mom. As a 6-7-year-old, I don't think I could or would. So it got me wondering, like... I wonder what the sort of relationship is like for sort of foster mom and kids.
Do you have
in terms
any
of...
siblings?
Yep, I have one. So like maybe
younger or older?
Younger. One.
I imagine to a lot of those kids, like since Emma was so active. Emma was kind of, like, so close to everyone, so happy, such a huge part of their life. It's, like, their older sibling, kind of almost like a second mom. Yeah. I think the fact that it was Emma, the fact that she was so charismatic, she had such a connection to all of the children, allowed them to believe it and kind of go past the kind of, oh, how could I betray mom thing. It's entirely because it was Emma.
That's a good point. And I don't know what it's like to have, like, a big sister or in, you know, be raised by one of your siblings effectively because your mom has, you know, 20 other children to look after. So that I think, yeah, I mean, maybe because there are so many, like, the relationship that the kind of love and relationship of a mom to that many kids, like, even if they try their hardest, maybe it's just not the same. Maybe there's some kind of, maybe there's just more distance, even if it's not intended to be, you know?
Yeah, it's just one mom and like 50 children. Mom's not going to give everyone the same kind of attention that your mom gave to you, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the same relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. You already addressed Mythbusters. sidearm Bolo Don, amazing. Like, he's developed a skill. Oh, this should be his weapon going forward, his primary weapon of choice. The Bolo, and he should always throw sidearm. Like, that's great. We talked about the Ray stuff.
I can't say anything!
We talked about Big Brother Ray. Thank you, Norman, for all your contributions throughout the show, even after, you know, even in the last two episodes. And
he really was a gift that kept on giving.
I know. And, like, you know, you mentioned, like, maybe Isabella is the Emma and Leslie is the Norman. I mean, that one scene where Leslie's getting shipped out, like, the scenes are parallel too heavily. Like, we absolutely have to think that's the case. And I adore that there's more layers to retroactively now to what Isabella was saying to Norman. Because I think everything we said when it happened is still totally valid. Like, I think that part of the reason why she said that to him is like, wow, like, this world I live in is cutthroat and cold-blooded. But here you are, like, knowing that you're a lamb to the slaughter and doing it anyway to buy your friends more time. Like, it's the most noble thing I've ever seen. Thank you for meeting someone like you. But also, a layer on top of that, thank you for letting me meet someone like you who is, like, this boy that I cared about so deeply when I was a kid. We are the same as we have the same thing that you and Emma had. Like, I love that added, like, retroactive context. Like, it is delicious and wonderful, and I slurp it up.
I agree. May I throw something out here randomly?
Mm-hmm.
I have a fan wank theory. Enjoy this. Do you reckon that Phil is Crone's son?
No.
Man. Gosh, I hadn't thought about it at all. What? Wow. I mean,
the complete fan wank. I don't really mean much about it. I'm just throwing it out there for fun.
I think the timeline fits.
It does, because Phil is only 4 after all. Crone is younger than Isabella.
Like, yeah, and, like, Isabella, like, Ray was, like, 4-ish when he said this stuff to Isabella.
Aww, shizzle doll.
Yeah,
I think it fits the timeline.
Man, what a shizzle that would turn out to be.
God!
I will spoil Mom? That this has not been addressed yet.
Okay.
Phil's ancestry has not been addressed yet in the manga.
Well,
Phil's
to be fair,
ancestry,
you know,
or his agent handler, or his, you know, who is giving him the orders.
To be fair, like, you know, they're going to have to leave the, you know, slam dunk reveal of him being the Yogg-Sothoth until the very end.
The hair don't fit, yeah. Oh my god. No, there's tons of slam dunk reveals where this would be a fucking whatever. trust me,
okay, I know we kind of already kind of have gone on to talking points here, but let's address Isabella for a moment. So Borg mentioned before that, okay, why is Isabella pregnant? I mean, why are they put through this, the moms? And do you know what this made me think of? I'm referring to the book here, not the show, because I haven't seen it. The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay.
Because, like, if you in this show, in Promised Neverland, I don't think it's the case the moms are having the kids simply to put them into the, you know, the stock, because the numbers don't add up. There aren't enough moms, you know, versus number of kids present for that to really be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I think here, in the same way as it was in The Handmaid's Tale, which was essentially about how, you know, they had no, the handmaids of that story had no control. They were just vassals to be used for procreation. Like, their agency was gone. I think in Isabella's case, like, the reason that they put her and all the other moms through it is, as Varg Elias said, to point out how powerless they are.
Yes,
and also to break them.
100%. Because
I can't, I mean, I'm not a dad, and I'll never be, you know, pregnant myself unless Junior turns out to be a documentary and not a fictional film, but anyway. I can easily imagine, or rather not imagine, what it must be like to, you know, conceive your child and have it taken away from you immediately. Because that's what all have happened. As soon as Ray came out, gone. And Isabella, like, had that little twist of his genetics or whatever that gave him that, you know, ability. Never happened. She'd have been none the wiser. She'd have been none the wiser. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the intent for her, you know, for her to find out that Ray was indeed her son. The fact that
maybe
he's
they
in
tell
the
them, like a few months after they get shipped, they tell them. Like, they get a message, hey, by the way, Ray, you know.
I don't think so. I think that the idea is more just the moment, like in the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, because, you know, if you can't even look after your own kid, how can you truly get attached to another one? It kind of breaks it. And I think that the fact that they end up in the plants is probably just, you know, them having that meeting about this, you know, whole procedure and going, well, they're here, we might as well use them. And then he goes, good job, Bert. Fantastic idea. So they, of course, just pop them back in the plant. But by the way, this also leads into some interesting like possibilities. Will we ever, for example, meet Emma's real mom? There's a thought for you. But yeah, like, as I said before, like, watching this scene unfold...
Crone is Emma's real mom? No.
No. But watching this scene unfold where I just kind of realized ahead of time the implications of it, I actually felt physically sickened by what that meant for what they'd done to Isabella. How they had violated her. How they had done... Like, they'd already broken her so much by taking Leslie away from her and then revealing the truth after the fact that they're only so much soil and green for the demons. And like, okay, final test. Conceive a child and then it just gets taken away from you. You don't even get to fucking name it more. It's so vile thinking about it. Like, and that to me, like, is... I mean, think of why they're called demons. Demons and devils, used interchangeably, are known in throughout all kinds of lore that they appear in, religious or otherwise, for tempting people to do evil. And that applies here. Breaking down otherwise good people to do horrific things. Just because, you know, it'll make your life a little easier, a little better. You know, you can live one more day. Live comfortably, as Isabella says. And so, for me, like, when it comes to villains, there is a difference in my mind between understanding a villain's motivation and agreeing with it. Mm-hmm. That's what a sympathetic villain is. Like, I can understand how a character came to act the way they acted, even though I myself think that it's still reprehensible they're doing it. And that's why Isabella is in, like, after now the show is concluded, she's probably one of my favourite villains of recent memory. Because I can totally see the path that's been laid out for her, that's led her to do what she's done. But I understand why she did it, even though I just don't agree with it, of course. And can inspire sympathy with me. Go on.
Can I just read, like, parts of the monologue from the manga?
Yes.
Yeah, as a response to that.
Please do.
I'm going to read straight from the manga. The stuff that this show left out. This is, like, Isabella. I have no regrets. I can't change the world. What would my death do? If anything, I need to make the best of what I do have. I must let them live as long as possible. I must provide all of the love inside of me. These children know nothing. He's no longer around. Referring to her friend, Leslie, with the lady name.
Yeah.
I must
How
live
dare
for myself.
You?
I must live for myself and to give purpose to Leslie's life. It doesn't feel like she's even a villain at this point to me.
No. That's it. Yeah, she's not redeemed, but she's understood. Like, at this point, we know who she is completely. This is also why I'm of the opinion we won't see her again. Maybe because she's killed off, maybe not. Because her function in the show, narratively speaking, is now complete.
Well.
I'm not going to say anything.
I would just, not knowing anything, again, I don't know anything about it, but I feel
the point where you stopped reading? How could you stop reading here, you monster?
Because he's an ice cold motherfucker!
That's right. This is when my winter vacation ended, and there was a lot to do, and I just didn't pick it back up. But look, the story feels like it could really broaden in scope and depth from here now that they're out of the puzzle box. And so Isabella, I feel like, could easily kind of come back in and have narrative functions that we just can't even imagine right now. And I feel like she should. It would be, I mean, I'm of the opinion that it would be a waste to kill her off just because she's had this incredible internal and a little bit of external journey before our eyes. And like, man, I feel like I'm understanding her now. Like I want to know more. And I feel like even though, you know, I wouldn't say like, oh, she all is forgiven or whatever. At this point, she feels redeemable. I don't know if she has been redeemed, but she feels redeemable. And I want to see her go forward. And I want to eventually see her like, try to make up for all this pain and suffering that she has been a party to.
Mm-hmm. I would also still argue against it just because as well, like, they've grown beyond her now. They've grown up. This is like, you know, they don't need her anymore to guide them or direct them. Mm-hmm. They made their own choices. So it feels strange to take that away and have her come back in.
She'd be in a new role, but you're right about, yeah. Like, as mom. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, that's what I thought of when you see the like the swaying ropes after they cut them. I was like, it's the umbilical cord, you know, because the umbilical cord is cut. They are going through the darkness into the light, like being born again. They're like, they're born newly into the world. They say it's their first,
definitely not forgetting this then.
They say it's their first morning. And they have been, and they're going forth from their mother. Like it felt like very much cutting the umbilical cord. And it was so cool. Like, what a fucking beautiful scene that was.
Yeah. For me, I just took that more as the severing of the ties that bind. Like, that's them leaving behind Grace House, never to return. Well, at least not in the sense, like, you know, of wanting to come back to remain there. But, I mean, they could come back to get the kids and hopefully. But, I mean, that's after all, like, why Emma says goodbye. But, yeah. I'll add one more thing, by the way. I think that, you know, to play devil's advocate here, or demon's advocate, if you want to call it that. maybe they did a favor by killing off Leslie before his country music career started. That'd been pretty fucking bad.
How dare you? Gosh, so much shade being thrown on Leslie this episode.
What do you think my name is? Come on. Come on.
His fucking acting career would fucking suck.
Man. You're saying you needed a machine gun in the guitar case, which I would endorse. Yeah. Completely. Shoot. Where was I? Emma before she slid down the rope. Unbelievable. This scene. Like, the way she looked at Isabella. It was, I mean, you didn't need to say anything. She said some very, like, poignant lines. But, like, just that look. And Isabella pleading, like, don't go, my children. Like, and her just saying, with her eyes, not saying, like, I reject this reality. Everything about it.
And substitute my own.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There you go. Therefore.
Indeed. Indeed.
Was so like, good.
It's a reversal of what we've seen before, like where Isabella was in control and Emma was not, shaking, pleading, crying. And now the shoe's on the other foot. And Emma doesn't even say much other than goodbye and that's it. There's no, you know, big go fuck yourself or a speech or anything like that. It's just bye. That's it.
Yeah.
Can I make one small observation, by the way? Mm-hmm. After Emma goes down the rope, when we cut back to Isabella, the camera frames itself and it's specifically there to show the tattoo on Isabella's neck before we go into the flashback.
Yes, thank you.
which is such a wonderful primer, reminding us that she was just as much a victim as anyone else here. Yeah. And then we go straight into the explanation of how that happened. Little things like that, little details, things that I adore in shit like this. So, well done.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Did we talk about... I mean... Did we talk about why did you give birth to me? That was fucking devastating. What a fucking devastating line.
The thing is, like, with Raid having his entire memory, like, you could pan that out from, like, the moment he was there to, like, being cradled, like, when he's young, before he left the headquarters, and what he must have overheard that wouldn't have made sense to him at the time as a two-year-old. But later on, he's like, oh, yeah, of course. They get fed to the fucking demons, aren't they? Like, I'm a fucking hot dog. Great.
Gosh. And, like, you mentioned the look on Isabella's face. Like, god damn. It's like she was, like, aging before I, like, just horror, anxiety, fear, sad. Like, what a moment. I mean, I can't imagine how she felt right there. Like, I feel for her very deeply in that moment, despite her, you know, having done horrible shit. Just like, god, you know, because you see her, like, before that moment, you see her, like, graduating mom school and kind of putting on her uniform and walking around, and it's like she has steeled herself. Like, she's been through all the trauma she thinks she's going to go through. She's been through all this horrible shit, but she's a survivor. Like, she is, like, stealing her heart. And then, bam, just to be hit with that, it's like, fuck, man. Like, because
The veil comes off. The veil comes off her face. Like, you can see the jet. Like, it's where we see how she always is, all the time. Like, cringing, scared, terrified, broken. But then she, like, takes a deep breath and goes,
for survival.
Which is fucked up. So fucked up.
Can I also just say, actually, as well, when it comes to Isabella and Ray, talking about how this show changes things retroactively with this revelation, look at all the times we've seen them talking privately. Look at all of those moments in which she gives him small things.
Mm-hmm.
This is like an incomplete, proper mother-son relationship here.
Man.
It's all business. And you can now then see, retroactively, what's been denied them. Because I can say with some certainty, even given how little we see of her, that if there was an alternate Promised Neverland universe in which Isabella just had Ray normally and got to raise him as a regular child, she probably would have loved the bones off him. Never mind that we see her actually love the bones off every kid that she does look after, even if it is ultimately to an ill end. This is why I said before about, you know, fake experiences, or rather fake environments, still leading to genuine experiences. Doesn't mean they didn't care. That's why Emma says goodbye to her in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, doesn't mean she's going to turn tail back and say, I'm sorry, Mom, I didn't mean, like, no. She did love her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't get in the way of, you know, having to escape their fate. So, yeah, all of that in the back, like, now it just, it's all the more sickening. It's...
Doesn't she say Vorgelia in the manga, like, I wish I could have loved them fully or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, she says that. She says, basically, let me find this. I wish I could have just loved them normally.
She's got, like, look, Isabella, pretty evil, done some evil stuff, like, in the name of her own survival, right? I mean, it's a hard choice to be like, no, I won't do evil, eat my brain and kill me, but she did the bad stuff. But to, like, to do all that and be part of that system and still have all that love in her heart for all the kids... And, like, balance those two things? Like, how does she not go insane? I mean, this is why we talked about Crone being
kind
of wacky. Like, but she just has to be made of such stern stuff, like, to...
Maybe she was, because it's not a question necessarily of how they appear on the outside, but, you know, living that way can be its own kind of insanity.
I guess so. She seems like she has it all together. I mean, in terms of like sanity.
I'd say maybe it's more a question of indoctrination, brainwashing.
I think it's more like she's focused on her survival, and she's focused on doing a good job, and she's focused on kind of her job in general to just distract herself from that stuff.
But it's
escapism.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I can sympathize with that, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like she's the sort of person, I mean, that's a conscious choice to focus on that stuff and not think about, oh, like, horrible eating, I'm a traitor to the human race, I'm killing people, these kids are being eaten. Like, I'm sure that takes a lot of effort. I mean, maybe I'm giving it too much credit. Maybe that's just what human beings do, is we distract ourselves from big problems. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, to me, I feel like she's got a lot of stuff in here. She's made of some fucking stern stuff. Was Ray being put with Isabella deliberate? I wonder.
I don't think so. I think that the only reason that works is because they had the infantile memory thing, but the demons didn't know about that. Or at least it's not clear that they did. If that was the case, they'd have it for all the kids. But then again, that also leaves them then open to the kids rebelling because they know the truth. So on the, you know, on the some value of it all, whatever you want to call it, I'm of the opinion, no, that Ray is a glitch. He's an accident, you know, in the sense that he has that they didn't know about. And it's just coincidence.
A demonic clerical error. Monty, right, put it in the wrong file.
Okay, Tim, why did you give Isabella the wrong gene therapy? You're supposed to be making her child immune to sickle cell anemia. Not, you know, giving him infant memories, you tit.
I was
That's
busy.
How the demons thought, by the way.
I was lifting, sorry. I was distracted. Bah.
Oh my god.
Well, maybe if you lifted your brain for a second, you wouldn't have made this colossal fuck up now, would you?
What did you say? I was thinking about, could I lift the bookshelf? You know? It's heavy. I want to lift it.
I'll throw the book at you in a minute.
You know, I thought I would get drunk and I would laugh a lot and have fun. But I've just been crying in the back the entire time. Yeah. This show is wonderful. Not just about the show, like, we're talking about what happens after. I'm not gonna spoil anything. Just remembering the fucking box of cookies.
Oh shit, there are Girl Scouts in the wild! They are gonna be in trouble!
Are they Samoas or Thin Mints? We need to know.
Oh man. Right. Well, anyway, do we have anything else we want to add about the episode or the show at this point? I'm done. I've said everything I need to say.
I think I'm tapped out about the episode. Well, I guess
I'm the most done I'll ever be in my life.
Yeah, I guess you guys have talked about how you feel about the show as a whole already at the beginning. And I echo those sentiments. Like, I think having consumed both versions, like, the anime stands up. And I think it's fantastic. I think the story is, like you said, Vorgelia, very tight. It's a very well-paced package. And like you said, Shadon, it's got so much heart and pathos. And, like, you feel it so deeply. And you love all these characters. And like Emily said in chat, like, all these, like, the ending is so great because it's just all these different arcs and moments paying off. Like, everything that we've seen up to this point has been leading up to this, and it makes this episode so sweet because it's just payoff after payoff after payoff.
I will add one thing though that I need to say, just needs to be restated, because I've actually thought about this some more. Crow's design is a mistake both in the manga and in the anime. Don't think anyone's deny that. Okay. But they missed a trick by not actually, you know, changing that. And I thought to myself, because people have said erroneously, because they don't know what they're talking about, you know, that how could the author have known? Well, consider the little elements, the names, for example. I mean, when you and I talked about Frankstock, what were all the characters' names? They were all Japanese.
Right.
But all the characters' names here are very much Western names. Phil, Ray, Emma, Norman. There ain't no fucking Normans in Japan who are naturalized there, I'm willing to bet you. Yeah. Exactly. So, clearly the writer of this work has some source in media that they've possibly consumed passively or actively over time that is very Western nature. That's where they got these names from. That's where they got the design of things from. Like Grace House, very standard offish kind of look. Mm-hmm. Isabella and Chrome's design. Like the only thing that seems really anime-ish in this show, and I'm not talking about the way it looks, is in terms of design, is probably the demons. Mm. And that's really it, I would say. This, by the way,
Ray's sweet hair is anime.
Well, this is true. Norman's hair. Yeah, Norman's got fucking...
Yes.
Fucking anime, yeah. But there's two other things I want to address very quickly, actually. It kind of links together. I almost forgot. So, shouts to, I think it's Nira, was it? Who put the point out on Twitter that fuck adapting this into a live show. Because they'll fuck it up. And then, of course, Vargelia, Netflix executive that she now is, came in with her pitch for it, which sounded like the worst thing ever, short of...
Go read my pitch on Twitter.com.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, here's the thing. I absolutely agree, and I apologize if it's not Manera. I can't remember off the top of my head.
It's Brianna, but I don't know
Brianna,
her.
Sorry.
I don't know Brianna yet.
I don't know
her chat name. I think she does, but her name in chat is different.
Anyway, as far as adapting this into live television goes, I would be okay with them doing a live-action adaptation. I would even, funnily enough, be okay with them aging the characters up a bit. But I absolutely agree with the sentiment as presented there that the script should not be changed in the slice otherwise. Change the small elements, but don't do shit like giving them a fucking love triangle and crap like that. We don't want some Katniss Everdeen bollocks in here. That was already fucking tepid.
Wait a minute. Hold on just a minute.
We would have an okay crone.
So what you're telling me is a bunch of teenagers live in this house without boning each other. Get the fuck out of here.
We gotta sex it up.
That's okay, the only way. What's the catch? They're escaping? What's the catch? What's the thing, you know? Okay, yeah. They're smart. They're escaping. Okay,
on lens flares.
What's the gimmick?
Bitches love lens flares.
Where are the explosions? I don't see any fucking robots. Come on. Get out of here with
this. Does Ray kill Isabella with an AK-47?
Come on.
Okay, so there's that. But the reason I bring this up is because it ties into my next point, which is I want to talk about how the show has been constructed. Just as a summation, you could teach a film class for the show, I would. I've learned so much and, you know, gained so much meaning from this show's construction in terms of its framing, its color schemes, its music, all that good shit. All of it. And I reckon that, you know, that's why, like I said with 91 Days, way back when, you could do a live action adaptation of it as well. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not you want to then make the argument that, as I said previously, that, you know, maybe the show would have benefited from playing loose and being more, you know, animated, to use a poor term, rather than being as filmic as it is, that's up for debate. I'm personally quite happy with it as it. Mm-hmm. But I do think it speaks to the quality of the show that even before we get to the material in question, it's just executed well. They put a lot of thought into it. Someone cared about this show.
Yes.
I watched Franks. No one gave a shit about that. I've been watching another show recently, which I'll be talking about on the podcast soon. Ain't no one giving a shit about that, at least not so far as that was constructed.
So many people do give a shit about that one, though, unfortunately.
Well, we'll talk about that another time. But anyway, yeah, someone cared about this show. And therefore, I'll care enough to say, you know, in turn, that I recognize what they would do with that. And good on them for fucking putting that effort in. I'm a huge fan, even a little obsessive over little details, little things that mm-hmm. texture shows and such. I love that shit. So, that's all. I'm done. I'm all talked out. I need more alcohol, and I need to go out to Manchester and go get liquored up.
All right, so... Shall we rate and review the episode then? Or we've already and the reviewed. Series.
And
we
the
reviewed it.
And,
well, and the series, yes.
Indeed. I'll go first then. This episode for me was, I'd say, a 4 out of 10. Specifically...
Wait a minute.
Four,
Wait a minute.
No, not far. I said, no, 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 I got it wrong. Sorry, I misspoke.
I will fucking kill you.
Like, bro, it's okay.
It's all right. It's okay. Just lifting.
Ding. Anyway, so I'm going to give it four. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 symbolic cutting of rope. It was all around an excellent finale. It doesn't quite have the same heights of execution as I've seen in the other episodes in this show. Some of them were stronger on that. Like with the music, for example. Like, the music here was good, don't get me wrong. And I think that something I haven't addressed, but I'm just going to say I don't agree with this, but I think that people could potentially fairly criticize it for saying, well, this all came out of left field. Why did we get to see all the, you know, builds for it? And there are good reasons for that, such as, you know, well, tension. But I can understand why that might feel, you know, a bit dissatisfying to people. It for me, not a problem. But overall, a very fine finale to a great show. Speaking of which, the show. So this is going to be out of 10 because I've rated other shows out of 10 before, like to give you an idea of where it sits on my sliding scale. I only have 4 10 out of 10s at the moment. That is still the case. This is not a 10 out of 10 show for me.
Boo.
No, no, no.
Boo.
I am going to give Promised Neverland ultimately an 8 out of 10. And here's why.
Riot.
Riot all you want. You go stomp your feet in those streets, man. I'm here, and I've got my force of conviction. So
Riot.
You can't make a total riot, for fuck's sake. Jesus. Like, that's the most, like... Yeah, Doc's doing karaoke tonight to complain about me and my opinions. I can see that happen. All right. There are basically two reasons, like... One is, I think they really did drop the ball with Crone, and that does hurt the show unnecessarily. It's not like something that's controversial because it's intended to serve a point. It doesn't serve any fucking point. It's in there because they didn't think about it, because they were blind to it. And that isn't something I can ignore. And secondly, I did get an emotional reaction out of the show, but I've had stronger reactions out of other shows that are in my top 10, like Welcome to NHK, like Madoka Magica, like Land of the Lustrous. It didn't quite reach that far. So those two things bring it down to an 8. But it's still a very, very strong game. It's just so well constructed from start to finish, apart from that obvious flaw. And it's tightly written, tightly scripted. The pacing's spot on. The mood is spot on. Only other thing I could say against it, I suppose, is the CG. But,
right.
Well,
right.
I've already badgered on about that long.
Right, right.
So, yeah,
right.
I will leave on that to say, like, if you want any more endorsements from me, I cannot wait for season 2. I'm glad there is a season 2. I'm glad we're going to get closure for it. And I cannot think really of any other endorsement like that. You know, I could be all haughty about the shit we've talked about and all the ways this show works. Do I want to see you next season? Of course I fucking do. There's your endorsement right there.
I don't even think season 2 will be closure. It'd be like 8 seasons of the show.
We'll just be airing like 2007.
It's been like 37 volumes.
Chapters, right?
Chapters, whatever. And then currently we're on chapter 130. So yeah, we're nowhere close to a conclusion.
Oh, we're going to be talking about this when we're in our 60s. Like, you know, my fucking daughter is going to be there wheeling me in on a wheelchair. All right, Uncle all right, Papa Shaden, you go talk about your podcast. That's nice.
Papa Shaden, they escape.
This and One Piece and My Hero Academia. We'll be talking about all of it still.
And Boruto. the hottest anime of this season.
Nice.
I love that reference, man. The pinnacle of action anime. By the way, I've always just thought Boruto was a funny word. Like, why did they call the son of Naruto Boruto?
Yeah, no,
that's
no,
like
no.
You
no.
Made it Russian.
It recontextualizes. It's in English. It should be, since Boruto is like Bolt.
So oh, Naruto, yeah, it Nart, is. It's Bolt. Yes.
Nart and Bolt.
Oh, it's turning into a Kingdom Hearts thing, isn't it?
Yes, so Nart is his English name.
No, it is Boruto, you're right. Lightning Boruto.
Yeah.
God. Oh, man. Okay, so I will quickly just say, like, here's the objective opinions that cannot be disagreed with by the humanities or the sciences. Quantum nor theoretical physics, particle nor Einsteinian. Here is the deal. This episode is 10 out of 10 buff demons, and this entire show is 9 out of 10 onion kids holding sticks of dynamite. But here's this inside joke, because me and Shadon were watching the episode, and we had paused it, and there's a shot where Landian is holding the coat hanger, and one side of it is so darkly shadowed on the player that I couldn't see it, and so it just looked like Landian was holding a stick of dynamite.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Awesome.
Oh my god. Shit's gonna get real, motherfuckers.
Light the fuse, Uncle Ray. Here we go.
That's my boy.
Yeah.
They grow up so fast.
I hit some dynamites as a bonus.
That's right.
He's gonna do a rampage mission from GTA.
Yeah.
Okay, Valerie.
Oh my god. You hear me sniffling in the background. It's like not even funny. This is my recommendation of the show. I've been just kind of tearing up in the background the entire time. This show is amazing. I'm not going to give it a number. I think I would be doing it a disservice by giving it a number. Just go watch the thing.
Sometimes good things come from Japan.
Go read the manga or something.
You could read the whole thing for $2. Or yeah. You could watch the show for $0.
These are such wonderful characters. They're developed in so wonderful ways. In the end, I got what I wanted, you know? I didn't want to see another kind of story about internal conflict. You know, about how do they do the thing as a group? Oh no, what are the problems? No. They're all a wonderful family, and they all get along, and they're all wonderful, and they're overcoming. Mm. They have no differences. They overcome all of the troubles. They're happy. Just go get drunk.
Bravo. Bravo.
I'm not going to say very much. I'm out of commission right now. I'm sorry.
Will you ever listen to this recording again later?
No, don't do that.
Yeah,
I
that's
my
right.
Voice right now.
Oh, it's lovely. Please, so
just fuck off.
With that cheery note, probably going to end
with that cheery note. Yeah, indeed. We'll wrap up now. So, on behalf of Doc Vargelia and myself, and also quick shout out to Emily Rand, who joined us previously for the show. Thank you so much, Emily, if you're listening. And to you, the audience, we're now four shows in on this live format we've been doing.
Yeah.
To answer Mira's question that's just popped up in chat, I believe it's Saranzanmai.
Yeah.
We're going to be covering that.
Saranzanmai.
It suck?
Let me dial myself from the future. If it sucks, I might be more surprised than I have been about anything in anime ever, because Kunihiko Ikuhara is like on the Mount Rushmore of anime directors for me. He is amazing.
Didn't Shadon watch it and he said it sucks?
This is new. It hasn't come out yet.
Okay, was it different?
Oh, you're afraid to what I was talking about before.
Oh, Shield Hero.
No, you didn't have to say. Oh, fuck. I always keep it secret.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
fuck me. Well, I can edit that out of the VOD and only the live audience.
Never mind. So, yeah, cat's out of the bag now. Yes, I am watching that show. Yes, I will be doing a solo podcast on it at some point.
I'm so sorry.
I'm four episodes in. I'll tell you all for free. Bad.
But yeah, no, Ikuhara, like, Vorg, you would love all of his stuff. He has directed Revolutionary Girl Utena, one of, if not the greatest anime ever made.
I don't know what that is.
It is very gay, and it is very literary and awesome. Uh-huh. It's a magical girl. It's awesome.
Look, I need to recover from shit. You can't just say this stuff.
He directed Mawaru Penguin Drum. Penguin Drum is excellent. And he directed Yurikuma Arashi.
I remember that one. Oh,
so good. They're all so fucking... And he did Sailor Moon stuff before. But those are his big three, like, oh, shit, he's got creative control. He's directing a TV show. And I'm so excited. So excited. Yeah, that's what Vorgelia said, Felix, that it is 37 chapters.
Indeed. So, just to get back to what I said, thank you all, as always, for joining us.
Yeah, 37 out of, I'll type it, just keep going.
Thank you. So, thank you all, everyone, for joining us. We will indeed be back very soon, next week even, I believe.
Yep.
To cover Sirens of Mai. We can very much hope to see you then. Feel free to drop us a rating or review on iTunes or SoundCloud if you have a moment. We would greatly appreciate it. Helps our discoverability. Until next time, though, we're going to break out now. We're going to escape ourselves. I have been Shaden. That's been Doc. That's been Vorg. Breaking down. Netflix executive that she is, having a heart. But as always, have a very good Friday, everyone, whatever you might be doing, wherever you might be. And, well, like we always say, embrace yourself for everyone to the ends of the universe.
And one last thing, the survey is still up. I'm going to keep it up until, like, through the weekend. So if you're watching this or listening to this and have not done the survey yet, please do. It will help us so much. If you go to our Twitter, Watery Death Show on Twitter, it's on the pinned tweet. Take a couple minutes. Help us out. Help us help you. We love you all. Want to hear what you have to say. And yes, please get up with us. We love you all so much. Thanks for joining. As Shadan said, all the wonderful things. Embrace each other, everyone. Till the ends of the universe, goodbye. Mwah, and good night.
Do all those things that they said. Sounds nice.